Today on The Art of Space, Sean Hillen talks to us about Black and White, the new group exhibition opening at the Oliver Sears Gallery, and we have the second part of our interview with photographer Bob Dixon. If you'd like to contact the show, you can email artofspace@dublincityfm.ie, and if you want to hear podcasts of previous shows, you can download them from theartofspace.podomatic.com. A couple of things before we get to this week's guests. Always a new group exhibition at the Green on Red Gallery, featuring works by Damien Flood, Jonathan Monk and Douglas Gordon, among others. For a full list of the artists contributing, see greenonredgallery.com. It opens tomorrow and will run until the 1st of October. Opening hours are Tuesday to Friday, 10 to 6pm, with Saturday 1 to 4. Two new site-specific works will go on show in the courtyard of the Museum of Modern Art from the 7th of September. Liam Gillick's A Game of War Structure and Susan Solano's Carmen will be presented in the beautiful 17th century courtyard at Emma until the 31st of October. Also on the 7th, Futures 11 begins at the Royal Hibernian Academy, which features work from one of our previous guests, Sheila Rennick, and along with James Merrigan. And also at the RHA from the 7th in Gallery 2 and 3, are exhibitions to coincide with Dublin Contemporary 2011, which begins the day before on the 6th, with previews on the 5th. See dublincontemporary.ie. Black and White is a new group exhibition at the Oliver Sears Gallery, featuring works by gallery and guest artists. One of the artists taking part in the exhibition is gallery artist Sean Hillen. Sean recently had an extremely successful show at the gallery, What's Wrong with the Constellations of Genius, which was a series of photo collages that we mentioned back on the show a couple of times last February and March. Before we began talking about the Black and White exhibition, Sean spoke about his early work and the genesis of his photo collage work, amongst various other things.
The early work was like traditional photomontage, inspired by partly by the anti-Nazi work of a guy called John Hartfield, you know, the early Dadaist things, and also by the work of Peter Kennard, who did a lot of work for C&D. So it's kind of overtly political, satirical stuff based on my own documentary photos. And so I was taking photos in as a young artist, but, you know, in a kind of documentary style in the North. I took about 1,000 photos over the years, and actually they are at last in the process of being acquired, I hope, by the National Library here. And it's actually one of those that we're exhibiting in this show, one of the original photographs. But I went to study in London in the 80s, and I discovered that no one really wanted to see more photographs from the Troubles, not least because the best photographers in the world had come to the North and kind of done it at that point. And so I started playing with the photos and collaging bits of tourist London into them, again, in a kind of satirical way. But I wanted to make them much more intellectually interesting than that, and to make them emotionally engaging, I suppose. So you would it always diminishes it a little bit to describe it, but that was kind of the early project. But of course, and thankfully, it you know, it became a much richer thing than the bare formula would suggest, if you see what I mean.
As regards trying to intellectualize it a bit and then also make it emotionally engaging, I think one of the things that, as regards all of your work from that period right up until your most recent solo show, you have the ability to connect with somebody, you know, the kind of art crowd and then people like the general public. I mean, it has that kind of duality of something that's, you know, quite intellectual but then quite accessible for somebody who mightn't know that much about art.
Well, that's great. I mean, that would certainly be an aim. I mean, I would like to think that art, you know, that my art anyway, could be accessible in different ways and different. I mean, a really good piece of art, I'd thought, should be multi-layered, you know, and should have a lot of different things going on in it. So I'm very happy about that. I suppose you could, in some, to some extent, you know, I have, are the intellectuals really do seem to like the work, you know, the Arlantis things, for instance, on about 20 book covers, and at the same time, the ordinary public, you know, can definitely get it. If anything, I don't really play that highly in the kind of art world, not least because, well, for perhaps because the work is so accessible, and at the same time, maybe because I don't kind of try and fit into traditions as much. But certainly, from read the question about it being accessible and complex at the same time, that's very definitely one of my ambitions for it, yeah.
As regards to the subject matter, Troubles was informed by your, you know, growing up in Newry, and then yeah. I think at the time of Arlantis, you said that the, you know, the kind of idea was to, because even now some of that Troubles stuff, it's still quite hard.
No, Fintan O'Toole pointed out in that recent article that because I'd been describing that work as funny, among other things, and he pointed out they're witty, but they're not funny.
Yeah, I mean, I can totally see why they're very witty, but I suppose they're not overtly humorous because we're still quite connected to that period.
They're absolutely. I mean, it hasn't gone away, as you might put it. Certainly, reality doesn't go away. I've discovered maybe a decade ago, suddenly realised that I was in an Irish literary tradition, intellectually, of serious humour. You know, I'd been looking all the time and not finding a visual tradition that I really fitted into. And I realised that this is an Irish literary tradition. There's actually a well-known critical book by Vivian Mercier on the tradition of serious humour in Irish literature, and it goes all the way back to the very earliest literatures, that there's a very powerful tradition of humour in it. And there's a great quote from Shaw saying, the joke is that I'm serious. So it's kind of circular in that way. The humour is a device to communicate, but it lets you carry, you know, very serious ideas. And that was a thing I learned from a great Northern artist called John Carson. I learned that very serious art could be very funny and vice versa, you know.
Being involved in that kind of literary edition, just to jump up to your recent solo show, there was a lot of in that show were, you know, taken from historical literary figures in Ireland
and then
juxtaposed them with Hollywood imagery and stuff.
Indeed.
Was that a kind of acknowledgement of your lineage, or was it...
Probably is, actually. Probably a sort of an indulgence for me to kind of start to play with those figures who loom very large in my own imagination as an artist, I suppose. And actually a key to that was, you know, in the past when I've been collaging, I've mostly used almost anonymous photos by other people, if you see what I mean. You know, I've kind of avoided using overtly artistic photography, do you see what I mean? So that I haven't been really so much infringing on other people's work, because by necessity you're using other people's work. But in the case of these writers, I actually know and have met over the years a number of times John Minahan, the great photographer who famously photographed Beckett. And I had been telling him, I was telling him about this project, and he said, oh, you can use mine. So that sort of gave me a kind of personal permission, and a kind of I took that as a wider license to start to use these images of these very famous and, of course, great geniuses of literature. They are visual conundrums, you know, they don't necessarily give answers. They ask more questions than they give answers. But certainly, I mean, they're partly about that whole idea. My political position is that most of what we know is fictional. You know, what we think we know is wrong about almost everything important. And that, you know, our society can, you know, this is, isn't it Orwell called it the age of universal deceit and all of that. So, and at the same time, you know, I wanted for the first time ever to kind of indulge and write large, you know, the magnificent, you know, the amazing beauty of humanity. And I suppose the great writers are, you know, another aspect of our kind of amazing, you know, the triumph of art, perhaps, over everything. So...
Just to get back to what we were talking about beforehand, as regards to, you know, the satirical nature of your work, there was a lot of reference to, you know, 9/11 as well in that show. And so, you have stated that you're politically or maybe socially motivated as regards subject matter. Before we get to the, because you said that the actual contribution to this group show is an older photograph. What I know that you've recently, well, it's just recently finished in town, there was the...
The Ghost Shops.
Ghost Shops. Can you talk a little bit... Because it's quite different from what people might be.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, what were the motivations for doing a project like that?
It kind of grew organically from simply looking. You know, I'm incessantly actually I can't stop looking. I think that's, you know, part of your nature as an artist. And I often photograph, and I take hundreds of thousands of photos, to be honest. And I started sticking my nose into these clothing shop windows that have been appearing over the last 2 or 3 years. And I, you know, immediately wanted to record it and was fascinated by it. And pretty quickly, my normal impulse is to kind of share a vision, the idea, you know, and of course to draw attention to it, because I think it is a very real economic, you know, financial reality, and I think something could be done to mitigate it, and I think it's an enormous tragedy. So I'm back to my traditional, you know, my natural instincts of wanting to engage in the world. I mean, I don't believe in an art that's for the drawer or just for the gallery. I actually believe art can change things. That's probably unfashionable, but I can't help feeling that and wanting to do it.
You've always continued to photograph, and you know, the photographs used in the Trouble series were photographs that you took yourself. Because you continue to take photographs, why do you think you moved away towards the postcards of John Hynde and things like that?
Well, I mean, if the visual arts in Ireland are the poorer, you know, the Cinderella of the arts scene, you know, then photography is Cinderella's poor cousin, you know, and is only now in the last very few years becoming something that people are aware of as something, for instance, that they could have on their walls, you know. You know, I have this anecdote that 30 years ago or so, I was at dinner in London and enjoying a conversation with a lady, and eventually she said, "Oh, what do you do anyway?" And I said, "I'm an artist." She said, "Oh, an Irish artist, how unfortunate." Which dumbfounded me unusually, but she, you know, it took me 30 years to discover she was right and I was wrong. So we don't really have a visual art tradition. It is a literary, you know, with great intellectual tradition, but it's a literary one. So only in the last generation or so have we had, you know, a market of any kind. Mm-hmm. And photography is coming up, of course, very quickly on the heels. And, you know, from there being, you know, no professional courses really in the country, now we're almost at the stage that every city has, you know, professional photography courses and fine art photography education. So it has changed very profoundly, but photography is still sort of in that situation where it's still an emerging art form almost in Ireland. At the same time, we have great photographers and great photography.
Do you think that seeing this type of work exhibited by you is something that we might see more of?
I hope so. Actually, you know, I do have, you know, other collections of work that I've wanted to exhibit over the years. But again, I mean, you know, one can't forget that it's, you know, we are in a kind of an industry, and, you know, the Ghost Shop show, for instance, cost me, you know, a couple of grand to put on, really, out of my pocket. And so that's not something I can do every week.
Yeah, okay.
To be very simply. So, but it's something I felt very strongly about, and it has been a very interesting and kind of not unrewarding thing to do. But financially, it's not, you know, that's the reality of that you can't make money with that work. If you can, with anything at all.
It's a case of having to find a gallery that maybe will subsidise it.
Well, a really good gallery can afford to show work that isn't so commercial, you know, and mix it with, you know, that's part of the art of running a gallery, I suppose, you know. But we're in a relatively poor place, and if that work was to get shown, I just had to hire a space and show it, you know, and which is what I did. Mm. And I'm very glad about it in the end, of course.
At the time of when the Oliver Sears Gallery opened, Now and Then, your contribution to that was as a guest, but then you've since had a solo exhibition, and now you're represented by the gallery. Is that
I am indeed, which is a very wonderful thing to happen. It just shows you don't know what's around the corner as an artist. I was shown in Chicago last year, and I was watching the Late Late Show because I wanted to hear an Irish voice. And slightly homesick, and I watched the actress Stockard Channing tell in the story of listening to another actor. Ray, what do they call him, had just said to her, "Oh, you were in Greece, that was your big break." And she almost fell off her seat laughing. She said, "In your career, as this other actor says, you'll have 30 big breaks." And I was thinking, "And you'll have 30 disasters as well." You know, this is the nature. Yeah. Of the business is that you don't know what's going to happen next, and you rely on breaks, and you have to roll with the bad things. But we've certainly been taken on by Oliver has been a wonderful turn of events for me, and I'm utterly delighted to be showing with him. It's really the best gallery in town, I have no doubt.
I spoke to Oliver at the time of Now and Then, and he spoke passionately about your work. So I think when you have somebody like that on board representing you, it can only lead to good things.
it's a dream for an artist, really, to have someone that understands the work and believes in it. And that's, I was so excited when I met Oliver, because he obviously really believes in art. I mean, it's not an industry, really, from his point of view. And the wonderful thing is that he is, you know, a significant dealer in the real sense of the word, and we don't really have that many of them in Ireland, I'm sure. You know, and he deals in the secondary market in, you know, in what one would consider very major names. And at the same time, he is able to have this very beautiful gallery and to bring in, you know, relatively younger artists like myself who, you know, are very, indeed, very lucky and happy and I think a good match.
Just to get to your actual submission for this, you spoke a little bit about what the piece was earlier on. Oliver curated this show, is that correct?
Yes, indeed. It's very much. In fact, I think it's one of the wonderful things about his gallery that it has a very personal stamp and that he has the knowledge and, frankly, the access to to really first-class artworks in order to put on a show. I mean, it's as good as any museum show, frankly, that I've seen in Ireland in the last few years. So it's quite an eyeful altogether, but it has a very definite kind of intellectual, not least it's a simple thematic idea, the black and white idea, but it's amazing the complexity that he's wrought out of it, you know.
And
it takes several visits, actually, to take it in, I think.
How did you decide on the piece? Is that an independent choice, or was it Oliver's, or was it both?
It was actually Oliver's suggestion that we might show one of these photos. As I think I mentioned, I'm looking forward to this. The photos, I think, are going to be acquired by one of the Irish state collections, but they've never been exhibited in their own right. You see, they were really overshadowed by the collage work.
Okay.
And never, even though they were, you know, taken with the view to, you know, being seen as artworks. So it was going to be one of those, and then it was an interesting journey to just decide what. And also it is always good and exciting in this instance to show something that people haven't really seen before from me, you know.
So you've seen all the work up?
I have. I've had a couple of fly-in visits around it, and absolutely, there are a number of really extraordinary things in there.
And some of your favourite works from the actual exhibition?
Well, there's a tantalisingly small thing, which is a photograph made by Max Ernst, the great German. You know, I noticed the plate on his home in France, his painter, sculptor, poet. You know, and I think there's a longer list of talents that he had. He was obscenely talented, and you know, one of the founders of the Dadaists, and just an incredible image maker. And this is a beautiful little photograph that he had made of one of his most famous paintings, I think called The Stolen Mirror. He had it made as a gift for someone, so it's like a micro study of his own painting, a very beautiful thing. Oh, there's a little collage artwork by Victor Vasarely, who everyone would know. It's a Hungarian master of op art. There's a Mapplethorpe photograph. There's an amazing the simple and effective painting by Robert Motherwell, one of the great American masters of abstract expressionism. And again, it's not probably abstract expressionism is not really largely to my personal taste, but when you see the real thing, you know, when you see it carried off so brilliantly, you can't help being affected by it. There's an amazing large Picasso original drawing, a rare thing to see.
This all sounds very exciting.
It's very, very exciting indeed. I mean, to stand in front of a Picasso drawing is humbling and a very, quite, I find it an affecting thing. I love, there are a couple of great Picasso quotes and stories, or they're probably endless ones. You know, my favourite, if I go to look for definitions of art, Picasso said, "Art is a lie that tells the truth."
Yeah.
Simplicity and vividness of his touch. There's that's an amazing thing. There's a very beautiful gouache on paper by Kiefer, another modern master, you know, first class modern master. There are a number of really good. There are other gallery artists who've produced, as usual, terrific stuff. There's a good Hughie O'Donoghue coming in. There's a lovely charcoal by Catherine Boucher-Boug, who's another gallery artist. Amelia Stein, of course, we would know, is an RHA academician and a wonderful Irish photographer. I'm looking forward to seeing that because Amelia's work is always beautiful. And there are a number of really very interesting younger artists. There's a very beautiful photographic work by a younger British artist called Idris Khan, who his works kind of are very meditative and deeply complex looking things, and they're made by multiple layering of images on top of one another. until it becomes, you know, like I don't know, an old carpet pattern or something. You know, they're very rich and complex images. I could go on and on.
As well as works by the artist Sean mentioned, you can also see works by the artist just finished a solo show there, Cathain Boucher Beag, as well as Patrick O'Reilly, Joseph Walsh and Diane Arbus. The list is extensive. The exhibition opens today and will be at the gallery until the end of October. With that and the group show in the Green on Red Gallery, the ongoing 29th anniversary exhibitions in Emma, Dublin Contemporary 2011, new exhibitions at the Monster Truck Gallery, So Long Roger Fenton, and the Hillsborough Fine Art Gallery in Parnell Square, which are having an exhibition 3+, where internationally renowned sculptors John Gibbons, Peter Randall Page and Michael Warren each select a painting by a major influential artist whom they admire. There's a real wealth of art in the city in at the moment and for the next couple of months. We'll talk about both those exhibitions, but the one at the Hillsborough Fine Art Gallery and the Monster Truck one again. Until then, see monstertruck.ie and hillsboroughfineart.com. A fortnight ago, we played the first half of an interview with photographer Bob Dixon. Bob spoke about his exhibition Reflections of the City, which has just finished at the Workman's Club. When we left the interview, Bob was talking about the inspiration for that show, but we also talked about some of his other work. We talked about the fact that you refer to these stories, but, you know, going through the portraiture, every portrait that you've taken obviously tells every face kind of tells a story as well, and very definitely in your work. How do you draw that out of the person that you're taking the photograph of?
It's unusual. My brother had only asked me that over the week. I don't really know. I don't know whether it's a confidence thing in your work, whether it's when you've built up a portfolio of work, so people will look at it and go, oh yeah, I'd like to be associated with that. Some people who I'd photographed probably hadn't seen any of my work and were photographed very, very casual, very, very quickly. It's hard to tell why, and I mean, the reason why I started it was half portraits, and people liked the idea of symmetrical faces, and that's where I started, was shooting like just half of people's faces with the idea of doing it as a book, which I've seen some work like it, but approaching people and like breaking down boundaries with people to get so close, I don't really know why. I couldn't quite put my finger on it, and sometimes it is quite unusual, because you would approach someone who has just played to like 7,000 or 8,000 people and has been on a stage or is world renowned, and then you go to take their photograph, and some people can be quite shy about it, some people can be very open about it, but after you've had, what I usually like to do is have like just 5-10 minutes with somebody, just to, so they know why I'm doing it and who I am, because when you're getting like within like a couple of inches of somebody to take a portrait, it especially with musicians, it's like there's no smoke and mirrors, there's no guitars to hide behind, there's no mics to hide behind, there's no fans, it's just me and them, and that I really, really liked. But I mean, some of the ones I shot, the likes of people would know, the likes of McGowan, Shane McGowan, was shot out the 40-foot, and he was doing something with his girlfriend out there for charity, and I was affiliated with the charity Temple Street. And I just said to him, he was sitting down eating an ice cream, I said to him, listen, do you mind if I take a portrait? And he's like, yeah, no problem at all. So I took a few frames of him whilst he was eating the ice cream, which he thought was funny, because there was like photographers everywhere trying to capture this thing of him being there. If I had taken him, put him in a studio, shaved him, groomed him, put him in a suit, and lit it all up properly, it wouldn't have been Shane McGowan. So it was perfect to shoot it right there and right then. And timing is a big thing. There's a lot of portraits that I've said, listen, I'm not going to do this now and try and do it again. Because somebody's tired, somebody's aggravated, somebody is like something on their mind. And you can read that in the image.
Yeah. So, all right, okay. So you would say that the more responsive they are, probably the better the photograph.
It has to be. They have to, in other words, I want to do it obviously because I approach somebody, but they need to want to do it as well. If they don't, it doesn't look good. And I haven't really hit the bar on that many. I mean, 90% of the portraits I've shot, I've used. There would be a very few selection that I haven't.
Yeah.
But they've got to be responsive, no doubt about that.
Okay. If this is the start of a pursuit of this type of work, mm-hmm. where would you like to see it going?
It's real fine art photography. That's where I'm going at the moment. Much as I love a lot of the commercial work that I've done and will still continue to do them, it's social art. That's what I like to do. I don't want to necessarily be like synonymous with some people who I photographed. You're kind of standing on the shoulders of giants. I don't like to do that. The stuff that I've got is very, it's more work that's fine art that needs to be read and needs to be really viewed. I'd like to show in more galleries, just to go to a broader market. I'd like to, taking some time off, I found, really, and reading some books has really tuned me into my photography. And what's out there, what projects I'm going to start next, I have absolutely no idea. But I really like to do more studies, to keep myself busy, to do more documentary photography, to sort of get more work out there, to please me more so than the masses. And that's something that I really, really want to do. I want to look at a body of work and be really, really happy about it, rather than say, oh, well, that's really putting it out there to the masses and people would love that.
Will you continue to do the other work while you're doing this? Is it to facilitate it, or is it something that you feel, listen, I've got to go for this gung-ho?
I think I'll always get drawn back into it. I mean, I can't begrudge myself that either. I mean, I recently did like a gig in Marley Park with Bell X1, but it was sort of like a photo documentary piece.
Yeah.
That was the way I wanted to work it. And it was nice that the lads and management had said, yeah, that's what we want to do. So if I do get involved in projects that I've been like involved with beforehand, i.e. something like the music industry, it's nice to be able to lay down some terms and conditions rather than three songs, no flash.
Right.
But I can see myself more being inclined to do more fine art photography.
Yeah.
Rather than anything else.
Well, I guess if you can find people like Bell X1 who are interested in a collaboration like that, it's still part of the same pursuit.
That's it. And with people like that, that's exactly what I want to do. It's with people that are interested. One or two of the band I'm affiliated with, I know. So it's nice to be able to sit down over a pint and say, listen, I have this idea. Rather than, I'll just get in and I'll take a few photographs and then I'll leave. No, I want to do the dressing room beforehand and after the gig. I want to get on stage. I want to get into the middle of the 8,000 people that were there. I want to take panoramic images of the marquee in itself.
If you want to learn more about Bob's techniques and influences, there is a feature and interview with him in the current edition of Click magazine, and you can hear the first part of the interview on our podcast page, theartistspace.podomatic.com. Bob's own site is bobdixonphotography.com. That's all we have time for today on the programme. Thanks to Sean and Bob for joining us. And don't forget to head along to Black and White at the Oliver Sears Gallery. It promises to be an extremely exciting event indeed. Next up on 103.2 Dublin City FM is Student Talk. We are back at the same time next week, and we shall talk to you then. Thanks for listening.